nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Okay, today we talk about a different topic. This is an important one, especially if you consider what we were discussing last time, which is that both in the, well, in the case of the sodium chloride, nickel sodium chloride system, you do have the solid phase. It's always in powder particle form. And all the other batteries that we have seen are also in particle form. And then just to give you an idea of, or to remind you, if you may, the need for understanding this, here you have a cross-section of a micrograph that Quinn Horn from Exponent was very nice to share with me. And well, down here you can see the anode. Okay, I'm going to try to sketch it out here. You have the three main parts. You have here the anode section. If you look at it, the anode is really formed from what appear to be these laths. Very anisotropic platelets, really, with very high aspect ratio. Okay, these specifically are graphite. Okay, here of course we have the separator. Okay, and for this picture we also have the cathode. Okay, it's, with this particular picture there are all sorts of interesting features. Well, there is clearly a region where the particles are spherical. You can also tell that some of them have these, from time to time we see these elongated shapes, but only from time to time. Okay, so you can think of it as that there are two populations. At least that's the impression that this cross-section gives us. Okay, of two types of particles, right? And the way we've been describing the system is we refer in each layer, that being cathode or anode, okay, we describe it in terms of the porosity, which to this point we have specified using the symbol, the Greek symbol epsilon, okay? And between the anode and the cathode, we have, in this case for that lithium-ion battery, we have the lithium plus exchange internally. And outside, we have an electron flux, right? Somewhere here, we have the load, you know, your favorite piece of electronics that is driving the system. Okay, and if you think about it, say at that interface, that's where the reaction occurs. Okay, you have the Li reacting into Li plus, plus E minus, okay, down there. And the electron is immediately extracted from the anode layer, okay, and goes into the anode and then just goes and sits here, okay, and tries to find a lithium ion to react with. Okay, and in the meantime, this lithium ion that was just exuded from that particle has to go all around this distance, has to basically walk through all these boulders of material, cross the separator, and then again do the same thing here, you know, traverse all the different layers, and finally at the one particle where it finds an electron and recombines and gets in. Okay? So the geometry matters a lot. Okay? So, and you can see that the larger the amount of porosity that we have, okay, the lower the number of obstacles that we will have. Okay? So, to our first approximation, and I'm going to draw it over here. Okay? The very first approximation we can make is try to think of this layer, and I'm just picking the anode because it's the most, in this case, the most anisotropic of both of them. We can think of it as being conformed of two phases, okay? And I'm going to make a very crude abstraction, okay, just to make the argument. I'm going to assume that I really have two phases, right? We have the active material phase and we have the inactive phase in the matrix, okay? And I'm going to try to, in this case, simplify my life, okay, by creating a much more simpler microstructure, okay, where this lithium diffuses through the obstacles. So those obstacles, I'm going to refer to them by going through those through these channels to a first approximation. Okay? My first approximation. Okay, I have to start somewhere. Okay? And, well, I have a flux of lithium, okay, that is going across that thing. Okay? The particles, okay, the one that I shaded here has a conductivity or diffusivity, if you may, kappa for the particles. And for the space in between them, I'm going to assign for that a conductivity kappa sub s, in this case for s for the space in between them, okay, not for any other reason. Okay, and well, if I put a source of material here, it'll clearly be distributed equally within each phase. Okay? You expect that, right? So I'm going to call this one the total flux. Okay? T for total. Now, whatever comes in, I hope you agree with me, it's coming out on the other side. Okay? At steady state. Okay? So I have that my flux, my total flux of lithium. I hope you agree with me. This is equal to the flux that is going through the particles plus the flux that is going in the spaces in between. Okay? Right? You have two contributions. One of them is coming here, right? From the total flux, a fraction is going here. And another fraction is going here. How big are these fractions? Clearly, it won't be the same. I'm going to show what here, one extreme. If I have a whole block, just a chunk of graphite, right, it will be very different than if I have on the other extreme just a chunk of a electrolyte. Okay? Won't be the same. Okay? In this case, the porosity is 1, and in this case, the porosity is 0. Okay? In that extreme, the flux, I'm too high up. The flux, the total flux, is going to be basically the flux going through the particles in that extreme. And on this other extreme, going to be the flux going. I did it the other way around. I'm sorry. This is the flux through the separator, through the spaces, and this is through the particles. Okay, both extremes. Okay, what controls it is, in this case, the porosity. Right. For the case of epsilon between 0 and 1, that's what controls it. Okay. So I can, to a first approximation, then rewrite this expression as, well, I want to account for the flux going through one individual particle, okay, and the flux contribution from the one individual of these intermediate spaces, okay? So I can do that. So I'm going to say for... I have to somehow modulate it for, say, 1 in this case means one of the particles. And here, the space in between corresponds to 1. And clearly, okay, the more space I have, the larger the epsilon, the greater I should have my response, right? So I can say here that is proportional to the porosity, okay? And by the same token, the flux that is going through the particles should be proportional to how much space I have, right? So I propose here a rule of mixture, if you may, okay, between both of them, okay? Well, it seems that I really didn't do much, except that now I can say in the next line that the flux going through one particle and one particle alone, okay, is going to be minus, this is just a, we're just invoking Fick's law, and say this is minus the gradient, say, of the voltage, right? Because this flux is a result of a voltage gradient, okay? And this is for the particle, and I can also say the same thing for the space left in between. Hope you agree with me that it's the same voltage gradient. That the voltage here, because all these plates are stacked on top of each other. If I put a voltage here and a voltage there, there will be the same voltage gradient across. Okay. Did I not convince you?
In that system, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I just bear with me, okay? I know what you're thinking. You're thinking in the real system that we have up there, okay? But I'm trying to get to that one, okay? But I have to start here, okay? So if I do that, then I can rewrite that expression as minus 1 minus epsilon kappa grad phi. Grad, of course, is basically the derivative of the voltage with respect to space, right? Minus epsilon kappa s grad phi, okay? And now I can collect all the grad phis, which I'm going to do in this little corner that I have left, and have minus 1 minus epsilon kappa plus epsilon kappa s grad phi, okay? And what I found for this very specific geometry, okay, is that the flux going through my very abstracted battery, okay, where I have all these parallel paths through which my lithium is going through, or my electrons is going through, okay, corresponds to the rule of mixture of the whole thing, right? So this is equal to minus kappa T being the total conductivity, grad phi, okay, which I'm going to write all the way over there on that side of the board. Okay, and say that for these very parallel channels, okay, which is very unlikely will happen in a real device, at least not in a battery made out of tiny particles, okay, that will very unlikely to happen, but I wish I could write it like that. Okay, so I'm going to say, well, really the total property of my composite, right, if you prefer my sandwich, right, that I made of electrolyte and an active material corresponds to the conductivity of the particles times 1 minus the porosity plus the conductivity of the porosity, the conductivity of the porosity times the porosity, okay? So wouldn't it be great if I could always write it like that? And I agree with you that in a real battery, that will not happen, because as you can see up there, right, I have all these different paths. Some of them are particles are not necessarily like this, but sometimes you could have, and I'm going to make another transition here, right? Particles could be, sometimes you can have particles actually like this, right? But sometimes you can have things like that, right, where you have these gaps in between, okay? But I would love to if I could write it like that. So I guess this is the case where the sock doesn't fit, but I want to make it fit. It doesn't matter what, right? So I'm going to propose that the total conductivity is going to be that relationship times some function. Okay, maybe I should rewrite it here to have my give myself more space. Some function that modulates that geometry. Okay? Why do I want to say it like this? Because, well, even if I don't have them line up like that, I know that when I have 100% solid material, the conductivity will be the conductivity of the of that solid material, right? And if I have 100% electrolyte, I will have, regardless of what the shape is, there will be no shape at the end, right? I will end up with the conductivity of the electrolyte alone, right? So I'm going to say that this fraction over here, I'm going to shove all my ignorance about the problem, right? It's the equivalent of, your mother is coming, right? And you haven't cleaned your room, so you sweep everything under the bed, right? That's under the bed. Right, we just put it all in that corner, right? This is the, all ignorance goes here. The geometry arrangement processing, okay, and well, let's put it that way. All my ignorance, I'm gonna put it in there, okay? And I'm gonna propose that any conductivity of my composite that looks like that, I'm going to propose it to have that form. And the trick, really, is to figure out that geometry, right? That prefactor. Okay? In general, for these composites. Now, there's one more simplification I want to make. Typically, the conductivity of the solid phase, okay, of the active material, especially in the cathode, is much lower than the conductivity of the electrolyte. Okay? And mathematically, what that means, I guess I'm going to do it in this corner, is that the conductivity of the electrolyte, which I defined as kappa sub s, is going to be much larger than the conductivity of the particle. So that's what I'm saying. If I say that, then I can say that my conductivity, my total conductivity, okay, is going to be that geometrical factor, okay, times epsilon times kappa s. Okay? What did I do? I just basically threw away that term. Okay? This is only true, this relationship that I just wrote, it's only true, okay, if the active material, its conductivity, or its diffusivity, if you prefer, okay, is much smaller than the one of the electrolyte, okay? If they're comparable, then you have to go back and use the whole thing, okay? So the trick is to figure out, really, what that number F is. Let me rephrase that. The trick is to figure out what this function is, okay? Because it's a function of everything, okay? It turns out that when people look at that relationship, they say, really, what I should be looking at is a much more complex arrangement. So I'm going to erase my little cartoon over here. And I'm going to try to make it now a little bit more complicated. Okay, so that I can try to get some intuition on what that function f is. Okay, which I haven't defined. Okay, and I'm going to draw again my the structure that I just erased, but I'm just going to draw only one channel. Okay, now the other phase now really becomes just obstacles, right? So all the work is performed what happens through that pipe. Okay? Hope you agree with me that transport is going to be very different. And I'm going to try to draw it in the best way I can. Even if the channel is straight, okay, in that arrangement. In this arrangement, it's going to be very different than in that arrangement. And I still have one more arrangement. Let me draw it here. I guess I didn't leave myself enough space. I'm going to draw it here instead. Okay, and the conductivity in that direction for this one will be very different from the conductivity in that arrangement and in that arrangement. In fact, this arrangement over here is just like that arrangement, except that I just rotated by 90 degrees. Okay? Do you agree with me that F in this case is 1? Because we built it that way, right? You guys remember, right? We have these parallel plates, right? And the only channel that it can diffuse through is through that one. What do you think about this one? What do you think F should be? Will the conductivity be lower or higher for this one? Why should it be lower? You're right.
It's more difficult for the particles to move through.
Right. You're right. The ions will have to diffuse through a longer distance, right? They have to go through this whole length. Okay? Put it here. Longer distance. Okay? Yes?
How does longer distance mean more difficult?
Well, it's, I guess physically it's the same mechanism, right? Atoms are just, ions are just hopping back and forth and being scattered, right, as they go back and forth, right? But the distance that that material has to diffuse, you agree with me that it's longer. So I guess when we say it's more difficult, we're really anthropomorphizing, right, in the sense that you have to perform more, some sort of more work to go to the other side because the distance is longer, right? What about that one down there? Yeah, F is zero. Why is F zero on this one? I can't go through, right? I made these particles, basically their conductivity zero or negligible, right? So that for all practical purposes, they're just blocking for stuff to go through. Okay?
It's the same as solid.
What? It would be the same as the solid, right? But we assume in this case, as we build it here, that this one is so large that we're basically saying that one is essentially zero, right? So it won't conduct or it won't diffuse, okay? That's basically what we're saying, okay? Okay, so let's elaborate further in the idea of longer distance, okay? Here, we really refer to the distance, this distance, okay? As compared to the macroscopic distance. So if this is the diffusion distance that I'm gonna call it L, I'm gonna compare it against the thickness of my electrode H sub C, which is what we've been using to this point. Okay? In this case, okay, I still have the same H sub C, but my L increased. Okay? So a way to assess that is to say, I'm going to define a quantity, I'm going to call it tau, which you will know why I'm calling it tau in a second, that this distance L over H sub C defines how long it is with respect to the thickness of the electrode. Okay? Okay, so this one in this case is greater than 1, and in this case, for that case, is 1. Right? Because in this case, that length is the same as that length, okay? And in this case, F is, because for F is zero, the length that the diffusant would have to go is infinity, right? Because in order to get from here to here, well, there's no path, so it really has to go all the way over there to infinity and come back down here, if at all, right? So it's never going to make it. So here, that length is infinitely long over that same thickness, same thickness here. I want you to notice something. When F is zero, tau is infinity. And when F is one, tau is one. And in between, well, I just get numbers that that could be greater than one. Okay? Do you see that? So, I hope you agree with me that in the worst case scenario, in the best case scenario, tau is one. And in the worst case scenario is infinity. Okay, you agree with me? And since it seems to be inversely proportional to F, let's just propose that. Okay, I'm going to say here, okay, we're just saying that F is going to be inversely proportional to the tau factor. Now, in the literature, people refer to this number tau as the tortuosity of the material. Okay? Many people spend a great deal of effort trying to measure these lengths. Okay? This is only one length, though. Okay? So it becomes very straightforward to measure, right? Basically, you just come out with your ruler and measure that distance and then add that distance. You know what I mean? So, and then you divide it by the thickness and then you're done, right? You have a number that in the best case, it's equal to one. Okay? So if we just put that in here, then we get that the total conductivity is going to be equal to the porosity times the conductivity of, we have in the electrolyte, divided by tau. Okay? For my very simple geometry. And again, tau is still, just like F, it's still a function of geometry, still a function of processing, and all the good things that you may do in the battery, or bad things that you do in the battery, will be hidden there. Okay? That's the trick. Okay? So, any questions at this point, before I proceed to the next bit? Okay. Well, that came out very well then. Okay, so the next slide basically rehashes what we just did. Okay, so I'm just going to skip that since we already discussed that. Oh, yeah, so here we go. This is a trick. Okay, so in a real battery, in a real electrode, what we have is not one type of diffusion path, it's a whole set of them. Okay? So here what you can see is, say, if I just start from this one, this line is, in this case, what was drawn here are the isocontour lines, the streamlines, if you may, okay? Basically, you're trying to go downhill if you apply a voltage gradient, in this case, and that isocontour line, you can see how it goes here, reaches an obstacle in 3D, because this is a 2D cut of a 3D object, goes around the obstacle, okay, and then finds the other one and then just bends out, okay? So that is one path, okay, one tortuous path, okay? Here's another one. You can see here it goes, it reaches that particle, bends around it through the back, keeps going, and notice what happens. There's another particle back there. It won't care about it. Why? Because it's so small, it doesn't even see it, so it just, there's no contribution there. Finds the other particle, bends around it, and until it reaches the end. Okay? The contribution to the tortuosity of the system by that line is going to be very different than the tortuosity contribution from this line. They're going to be ballpark about the same value, right? In fact, you can measure lengths, diffusion lengths, starting at every point, okay? And make a whole statistics of that, and you will see a distribution, a Gaussian type distribution of the different diffusion paths. But what you ultimately care about is the superposition of all these contributions, right? The sum of all these diffusion paths to the tortuosity of the system. Okay? Ultimately. And this is a very a simple system in the sense that all these particles are perfectly spherical. As you saw from the previous slide, particles are not necessarily spherical, okay, and can actually be very messy, okay? I'm just going to take a step back. Why are we you doing porous and particles in this case, porous materials, and using particles? If you remember, we need to put it in particle form, because if we don't do that, then we won't be able to access that active material. If we just have one solid chunk of stuff, okay, we will be able to basically lithiate or react the surface of the material, but the bulk of it will not be used. Okay? So that's the reason. Okay? If we could find a way, okay, and that's a challenge for you guys, you know, coming generations, find a way to not have that 30% or 40% porosity that typically a battery has, but brought it down to say 5% or 10%, okay, you will gain that extra 20%, right? But you can see why we care about that tortuosity, okay? Because if you look at the final equation, you can see here that my conductivity increases, okay? The losses basically drop the higher my porosity, okay? But I will get to use less material, okay? If the conductivity of the chemistry of the electrolyte matters, because notice that the poor conductivity would also make that number drop. And the arrangement of those particles matter, because the longer the diffusion path, okay, the greater the tau, the smaller the total conductivity, and the greater the losses. Okay, so all of those end up adding up. Okay, so you care about those three. Okay, and it's really a dichotomy, right? Because if I have an epsilon too large, yes, my losses are less, okay, but the energy density that I have is also less. Okay, if I put a lot of energy density, then my epsilon is very low, and then my losses are very high. Okay, so the trick is to either engineer to a optimum porosity for that application, okay, or to engineer the microstructure, or to improve on the properties of the electrolyte. Okay, and we will of course talk about each of them separately as weeks come, right? But today I wanted to talk about this topic specifically. Any questions? Yes.
Can you go back to the slide with the microstructure one?
So that... Oh, absolutely.
Here, the particles in the anode are mostly horizontally aligned. So, if two particles are stacked one above the other,
two particles
in the anode are stacked horizontally. Here, they're mostly stacked horizontally, as I see.
Right.
So the electrolyte in between them would not be used according to this model. So
yeah, you're right.
Why are they aligned that way?
That's a very good question. And for the people that in the video, why are particles being aligned horizontally if the material in between will not contribute at least as much as if the particles were oriented in a different way? Yes. And from that description, you can see that. When you make a battery, what you do is this system, if you think about it, is a composite, right? You come with your powders of active material, you have your liquid electrolyte, and you have an additional thing that I haven't talked about, which is, where you have the carbon black, right? You mix these three and make some sort of dough, right? And you try to mix them, right? And to that point, there should be a mess of particles oriented in all directions, okay? And then you have to come and actually put it in, let's see, how big is that space? You can see if this distance is 100 micrometers and that one is 100 micrometers, that seems to be around 25. So really we're talking about 250 micrometers where you want to pack as much energy as you can, okay? You agree with me on that, right? You want to put as much as you can, okay? So what people do is that they lay down a layer of material. And then they go and apply, say, 1 or 2 kilobars of pressure.
Okay, and that pressure, the particles, if they're randomly distributed, the moment you apply, you compact it. Say you apply pressure on it. You tap it. Okay, the particles will start aligning, right? Because they try to accommodate that space. And people do this very actively, and you can tell that battery must have been compressed per layer, right? Each layer was laid down, okay, and then compressed, right? And then the electrolyte was laid down, probably compressed too to remove all the bubbles, okay? And then the other layer laid down and compressed again, okay? Each of those layers, because you want to fit those 250 microns, you have to compact it. And with that compaction comes the orientation, okay? And I'm just going to highlight it. Okay, I'm not going to solve it, but I think it's an interesting thing to look at. Let's just say I have particles. Oh, in fact, let's try to make them closer to that. Let's see. Just eyeballing it. I would say this one over here would be, like 3 to 1. Would you believe me if I say that this one specifically looks like 3 to 1? So let's see. Okay, let's call it the differential tortuosity, right? The tortuosity in that direction will not be the same as the tortuosity in that direction. Okay? Right? From what you're saying, right? And it won't be the same if I start my diffusion path here in that direction that if I start my diffusion path here in that direction. Okay, so for the sake of argument, I can start my diffusion path here, right in the middle, and here, right in the middle, right? And you can see that for that particle of size, let's call it G, okay, in that direction, okay? And since that's 3 to 1, then this distance should be G over 3, right? Should be this other distance, right? It's right here. Okay? You agree with that? Okay, so the diffusion length in this direction will be given by basically measuring the perimeter that I traverse, the first approximation, right? Compared to the diffusion distance that I go through that direction. Right? Do you see that? I'm going to just highlight it here. This would be diffusion path Ly in that direction as compared to okay? There's one more thing, okay, that I should probably said that when you have something that starts here, there really doesn't seem to be any reason why we want to bend down there. Right? So really I should be saying that if it comes down there, it should really end up here, right? I shouldn't have to add that bit. And the same in that direction, if I had start here, I should really just end up like over there. Right? Do you see that? So since this path, I'm gonna call this path Ly and I'm gonna call this path Lx. Okay? You agree with me that both paths are gonna be different? Okay? That means then that the tortuosity along the x direction, okay, is going to be very different. Yeah, it's going to be different than the tortuosity along the y direction. Okay. So from that perspective, then I can say that my tortuosity really should be an orientational quantity. Okay. I was going to introduce that later, but since you asked the question, might as well. Right? It. Okay. You seem you have a question. Yeah. You sure? Okay. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So really, because it's an orientational quantity, I should really be talking about a tortuosity tensor, which is something that people are just starting to handle until very recently. They didn't discuss this until maybe 2-3 years ago people started to introduce that concept. Okay? And if you think about it, it makes sense, right? It's across the thickness of the anode, the diffusion path is going to be much longer than across the than within the plane, because of the anisotropy of the system, right? Quantifying it, though, I think it's that's a trick, right? To quantify it, yes.
So, tortuosity of the system is it averaged out tortuosity for each diffusion path?
Right, exactly, and that's exactly the point that I was trying to make with this slide. Okay, that you can think of individual tortuosity contributions by starting from different points, but what you care about is the microstructural average of all these streamlines across the whole composite, right? The whole packed structure. Okay, not only about one, because you can see, if I take this line, basically the tortuosity associated with that particular streamline is going to be one, right? Because it's basically stretched, right? It's already, and as compared to this one over here, which is going through all these different obstacles, right? So that one's going to be much larger, okay? And well, it really depends on where you start, but at the end, you would have to sum every single streamline and take the average of that, and that will give you the average path, right? And that should give you the right number, right? In this case, this particular cross-section, I think this distance is like, you can see it there, it's 100 micrometers. So, presumably, the size of your domain or your cross-section through which material is flowing through is representative enough of what would look like if instead you use that. Because see here, I mean, those are 100 microns, right? But those things wrap around for several meters, right? And you just wrap them and put them in the can, right? So presumably that section that you're looking at is representative of the whole thing. Okay? Okay. Yes?
So, for instance, the tau needs to be as close to 1 as possible. So that's the case. So,
say that again?
Tau needs to be as close to 1 as possible.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh.
So that's the case. First of all, the horizontal orientation, I don't know if it's vertically oriented. It sounds a little bit better, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you're right. Yeah. If I oriented all my particles like that, then my tortuosity would be 1. Right.
So now the question is, I saw that those particles, I don't understand why some are large, some are small, and it's everywhere. It's like a chaos.
Mm-hmm.
If we can have the same size particle everywhere in the engineered structure rather than this chaos, is that better to have that way? Or it's easy to calculate power for sure.
Right. I'm not trying to avoid your question, right? All I'm going to say right now is that when you think of all that, and I think that's great what you're saying, right? Thinking of how do I make my tortuosity as closer to one as possible, right? Which is basically what you're asking. You also have to consider that you can make the fanciest, highest performance battery in the universe, but if you cannot bring the price down to a point where you can actually sell it, no one is going to want to use it, okay? It was not so long ago that two or three companies actually went under simply because they were great batteries, but they wouldn't compete with batteries made like this, right? That because it's very hard to control them, and once you control them, that raises the price. So what you're suggesting is to use things like colloidal crystal processing, right, where you basically perfectly align them. That has been tried, okay? Perfectly spherical particles, that is very hard, because, see, the graphite particles, okay, are that elongated, okay, because the crystal structure is HCP, so it favors one facet with respect to another one, forming these, not like that, right, basically making these platelets, right, that look like, well, as I was showing you the other day, like hamburgers, right? Okay, they look very different is what I'm trying to say. Okay? But I will come back to that point, okay? Because what you're asking is whether or not if I perfectly align them, it will be better. Okay? And I'm hoping to answer that, well, not today, but next class for sure. I already have some started working on that the specific part too. Okay? And so I'm hoping to get there. So now the bottom line, okay, from the statistical sum of every single contribution from every streamline for a randomly distribution of packed particles, okay, the tortuosity, I'm going to put it here, as a function of porosity has been experimentally measured a long time ago already to be 1 over epsilon to the 1/2. Okay? That has been determined many years back before any of these porous batteries were ever measured in the context of sands. You know, how liquid would diffuse between silica particles, okay, and I'm just going to show you the reference. I should play that one. Okay, we already discussed this, that the total conductivity is a function of the morphology, the topology, if you may, and the Bolling fraction of each of the phases. We talked about the different transport paths, okay, and that ultimately we care about not one path, but the statistical sum of all of them, okay, and that relationship falls out, and then we end up with this, ultimately this relationship, right, and that relationship was done by Brugmann, and you can see the date as to when he published that paper, okay. He wasn't thinking on batteries, he was just thinking on diffusion on a bed of particles, okay, and he made experiments for that, and his experiments fit that relationship, okay? So, of course, it's at this point, it feels very compelling to just go and substitute this and there. So if I just combine them both, then I get epsilon Ks over 1 over epsilon to the 1/2, which I can put that over there, and I get epsilon to the 3/2 kappa S. Okay? I find very interesting that the exponent is, as it was reported, was set as exactly 1/2. I find that very interesting. Okay? Also, I find very interesting that as he measured it, okay, there's no additional prefactor. Everything is set by that epsilon. Okay? And still, we still have that the lower the porosity, the lower the conductivity. Okay? Which is still a big deal. Okay? Now, this is, again, 1935. Okay? So, Baroth B. Jaragoban decided that he wanted to simulate that. Okay? And let's see, do I have time? Yes, I have a couple minutes. The idea here was to assess the effect of particle size polar dispersity. Okay, because this sands that he made his diffusion or his conductivity calculations or measurements were very, very uniform. Okay, so you should expect that there should be one difference if the polar dispersity of the distribution is basically zero, right? If there's a monodispersed distribution of spherical particles, right, which is one of the things you ask about, or if I have a very broad distribution of particles, okay, it won't be the same. At least you would think it wouldn't be the same. Okay, so, well, back in 2012, he just made that comparison. You can see here, each data point here contributes with one specific numerical calculation, okay, and that's the original relationship, and that's what he came up with, okay? Pretty much numerically, you get the same as the experiment, okay? And these are for low polar dispersity calculations, right? So he started to split them out into different contributions. You can see monodisperse. In fact, monodisperse is below the Brugmann line, okay? 10% polar dispersity, 20%, 30%, and somewhere between 30% and one particle size standard deviation, he started getting this large scattering of behavior, finding where, according to him, the Brugmann relationship would break, you know, just from the context of polar dispersity. If you think about it, it makes sense, right? Well, especially since he had a finite box, okay? My guess is that's what's actually what's happening here, that when he reached RP, and I'm going to try to draw it. Let's see, where do I draw it? Let's draw it in this corner again. Just going to try to draw a 2D representation of the 3D simulation. If I have... that in one finite size box, it shouldn't be surprising that that large particle is going to perturb enormously the streamlines in this calculation, okay? Which is not the same, of course. If I replace that particle with this, I basically get closer to the average, okay? So that matters.
What do you have periodic boundary?
Yes, if you get you put periodic boundary conditions, well, you could still get the contribution of that one, because the contribution of one single particle will then might see its contributions on the next box, right? So you really want a box that is large enough so that this giant boulder doesn't see itself on the other side, okay? Either you make the box much bigger, okay, or, well, I think that's the only way you have, right? Either if you either do it with periodic boundary conditions or with finite boundary conditions, you would still have this issue, right? Which is my guess what happened here, that for that size, he was starting to see those effects, okay? So that said, I think it was quite exciting to see that something that was done in 1935 correlate very well to what one expects to see numerically, okay? And I should stop there because I'm already 1 minute over my time. But we'll add more to this on Monday. Okay. Thank you. Have a nice weekend.